Zionism again. We are interested, however, in the political role that these DP camps played, and the simple fact of the matter is that the Jewish DP camps and other living quarters served as transit and military training camps for the invasion of Palestine. The world had an opportunity to learn this fact as early as January 1946. As happens on occasion in international organizations, the nominal head of the UNRWA operations in Germany, British General Sir Frederick E. Morgan, was his own man and not a Zionist stooge. While he had real control only over a part of the UNRWA German operations, he knew most of what was going on, and made a public issue of it. At a press conference in Frankfurt, he charged that an organized Jewish group was sponsoring an exodus of Jews from Poland into the US zone in Germany. He ridiculed, quote, all the talk about pogroms within Poland, unquote, pointing out that Jews arriving in trainloads in Berlin were well-fed, well-dressed, and had plenty of money, quote. They certainly do not look like a persecuted people. I believe that they have got a plan, a positive plan, to get out of Europe, unquote. Morgan added that their money was to a great extent occupation marks, printed by the Russians. It may be recalled by the reader that one of the most spectacular acts of Soviet agent Harry Dexter White, whom we encountered in Chapter 3, pages 97, 133, as the boss of the U.S. Treasury's international operations, was his transmission to the Russians of the plates of the U.S. occupation currency. Chaim Weizmann denounced Morgan's statement as quote-unquote palpably anti-Semitic, and Rabbi Wise declared that it savored of Nazism at its worst, and was reminiscent of the fraudulent protocols of Zion. UNRWA headquarters in the U.S. announced that Morgan had been dismissed, but Morgan denied this. Wise, Henry Monsky, president of B'nai B'rith, and other prominent Jews then huddled with Lehman, and, quote, assured Governor Lehman that it was unwise under the circumstances to press the case against Morgan, unquote, since Morgan apparently had enough evidence to support his statement. Later in 1946, there was an inquiry into the Jewish problem by an Anglo-American committee, which determined that Morgan had underestimated the situation. In the Jewish DP camps, quote, faces changed from day to day, and new persons answered to old names on the nominal rolls, as the Zionist organization moved Jews ever nearer to Palestine, unquote. The Jews, mainly Polish, were pouring into Western Germany from the east, and passing through the UNRWA-operated camps. In these camps, many of them received military instruction for the invasion of Palestine from uniformed non-commissioned officers of the British and U.S. armies. Although it was the case that almost none actually wanted to go to Palestine but to the U.S., every means of forcing immigration to Palestine was employed. Summing up his association with UNRWA, General Morgan wrote in his memoirs, Peace and War, 1961, quote, to serve such an outfit is beyond description, unquote. Years later, Zionist authors conceded Morgan's charge in laudatory accounts of the organized exodus of Jews from Europe. In August 1946, LaGuardia fired Morgan for charging that UNRWA served as, quote, an umbrella, covering Russian secret agents and criminal elements, engaged in wholesale dope peddling and smuggling, unquote. Morgan was replaced by Meyer Cohen of the Washington office of UNRWA. This action was taken at a time when there was a great deal of well-publicized conflict between UNRWA and military authorities in Germany. LaGuardia had come to Germany at the time, in order to deal with various problems, Morgan being one of them. At a news conference held immediately after he fired Morgan, LaGuardia had an angry exchange with Hal Faust of the Chicago Tribune, whom we encountered in Chapter 1, page 51. Faust had asked how much money nations other than the U.S. had contributed to UNRWA. LaGuardia, however, would answer none of Faust's questions, on the grounds that Faust's, quote, dirty, lousy paper would not print it anyway, unquote. To Faust's repeated requests for the information, LaGuardia shrieked, shut up. Morgan had not been the first high-ranking Allied officer to collide with the Zionists. In the summer of 1945, the Harrison Report to the White House had asserted that Jews in the U.S. zone in Germany were treated almost as badly as they had been under the Nazis. Although many Jews in the camps publicly ridiculed these claims, General Eisenhower, the Supreme Allied Commander, visited General George S. Patton Jr., U.S. Third Army Commander and Military Governor of Bavaria, and, quote, read the riot act to him, and astounded him by saying that he meant it, when he said that Germans were to be ousted from their homes, if necessary, to make their victims comfortable, unquote. Shortly later, Eisenhower relieved Patton of his duties, allegedly because Patton had said in public that too much fuss was being made about ousting Nazis from key positions, that the distinction between Nazis and non-Nazis was similar to the distinction between Republicans and Democrats, and that the key to a successful occupation of Germany lay in showing the Germans, quote, what grand fellows we are, unquote. This was just the most publicized instance of the widespread, quote, reluctance of occupation authorities on the operational level, to act as tough as the policies enunciated by the heads of state in Berlin and by General Eisenhower himself, unquote. Patton was assigned to command a group writing a military history, but he was in an automobile accident in December 1945, and died 2 weeks later from complications. Eisenhower's attitude toward Zionists had always been most friendly. Shortly before the end of the war, the Zionist organizer Ruth Kleger, a native of Romania who had emigrated to Palestine before the war, had visited Eisenhower's Shaif headquarters in Paris in order to explain to Judge Rifkind, Eisenhower's advisor on DP matters, her mission of organizing transports of Jews to Palestine from Germany. She was made a U.S. Army colonel on the spot, and given the papers necessary for her mission in Germany. Eisenhower's services did not end there, because the troop transport ship Ascania, owned by Shaif and manned under orders from Eisenhower's command, was then put at the disposal of the Zionists, and 2,400 Jews were taken to Palestine in it. The British met it on arrival but did not want complications with Shaif, so they allowed the passengers to enter Palestine. Eisenhower later became President of the United States. As suggested above, the Jews who left the Soviet Union for Poland did not, for the most part, remain in that country very long. Supported by the Joint Distribution Committee and related Jewish organizations, contributions to which were tax-deductible in the U.S., the Jews moved on to Germany and, in some instances, Czechoslovakia, spurred on by Zionist propaganda of all sorts. There was the talk, which we have noted, of pogroms, and there was also, no doubt, a widespread idea among the Jews that all were bound for the U.S. From Germany, many did indeed eventually depart for the U.S. But many others moved on to Italy, where there were also UNRWA camps for them, or to France, which earned a reputation at that time for marked friendliness to the Zionist cause. From Czechoslovakia, the Jews moved on to Italy or to Vienna, and from Vienna to ports in Italy, or Yugoslavia, or to Budapest, Belgrade, and points near Palestine. In all this hectic illegal movement there was, of course, no respect paid to such things as legitimate passports or identity papers. Greek identity papers were manufactured on a large scale, and many Jews posed as Greeks returning home from Poland. When the Greek government learned of this, they sent an official to investigate, but the official was an active Zionist himself, and merely informed the Zionist organization that he could cover up the past illegalities, but that the quote-unquote Greek angle would have to be discarded. It had, however, served so well that in Czechoslovakia, border guards, who thought that they had learned from the large number of quote-unquote Greeks that they had processed, what members of that nationality looked like, got suspicious and made arrests when real Greeks appeared. In the beginning of the mass movements, the Zionist organization had found that the Jews were too undisciplined and demoralized to serve as members of an effective movement. They therefore settled on the method of the propaganda of hatred. To boost the fighting morale of the Jews in the various camps, they began, quote, to instill into these Jews a deep dislike and hatred for the German and, indeed, for their entire non-Jewish environment, for the Goyim around them, unquote. In the winter of 1946, the Anglo-American Investigation Committee visited the Jewish camps in Germany, and was, quote, overwhelmed by this anti-Gyism among the camp inmates, by the impossibility of maintaining any contact between the displaced Jews and the British and American peoples, unquote. The U.S. occupation authorities in Germany were naturally very concerned about the fact that so many people, so tenuously classified as refugees, were pouring into their area of responsibility, but were reluctant to speak out too loudly or bluntly, for fear of the sort of abuse that had been heaped on Patton and Morgan. However, the constant increase in the refugee population was creating problems that could not be ignored. In June 1946, a group of U.S. editors and newspaper executives arrived in Frankfurt as the first stop in a tour of Germany, and were told by, quote, high United States officers, unquote, that Jews were flooding into the U.S. zone at the rate of 10,000 per month, thereby creating a quote-unquote grave problem. It was said that, quote, many of them are coming from Russia, and if they join those in Poland in an apparent mass movement toward Palestine, we may have to look after 3 million of them, unquote. Of particular interest in this statement is where many of the Jews were coming from, and the fact that the U.S. Army authorities felt it plausible to use a figure of 3 million, not a misprint. They were, of course, exaggerating the situation in order to provoke some sort of relevant action, for there was never any possibility that 3 million Jews would enter the U.S. zone in Germany. Nevertheless, their use of such a figure, and their specifying that many of the Jews were coming from Russia, are worth noting. The problem got so much attention that in early August 1946, the American military governor, General McNarney, announced that, quote, the United States Border Patrol will not permit Jewish refugees from Poland to enter the United States zone and organize truckloads and trainloads, unquote. McNarney added, however, that, quote, if persecutees come across the borders individually, of course, it is a different matter, and we will accept them, unquote. It may have surprised many observers that this seemingly unimportant qualification was so satisfactory for the Zionists that, shortly later, Rabbi Wise and other prominent Zionists publicly lauded, quote, the attitude of General Joseph T. McNarney toward the entire problem, unquote. The puzzle was resolved the following November, when it was reported that a record 35,000 Jews entered West Germany from Poland, the greater part of them to the U.S. zone, in September, and that the trickle that existed in November amounted to, quote, 150 to 200 persons daily, unquote. In the news stories of this period, it was frequently the case that the Jews returning from Russia to Poland were described as consisting mainly of the 1940 deportees to the Soviet Union. Such a press treatment was to be expected, because the others were supposed to be dead, but such interpretations may be disregarded, although, as Korzen remarks, this group included 1940 deportees. During 1946, the U.S. Senate War Investigating Committee sent its chief counsel, George Meter, to Germany to investigate the U.S. occupation policies. Meter's report, which charged, inter alia, widespread immorality and racketeering in the army, was suppressed as a result of, quote, tremendous pressure by the White House, State, and War Departments, and Senator Arthur Vandenberg, unquote, and a threat of resignation by General Clay, but the contents eventually were made public anyway. The report was very critical of the entire practice of accommodating the Jews who were pouring in from Poland, because they were not really refugees, in the sense of having been stranded in Germany at the end of the war, but part of the mass movement of people, that was being sponsored by private groups on behalf of a specific political cause, Zionism. The U.S., therefore, was, quote, financing a political program, unquote, by receiving these Jews in the German DP camps, although that program had never been submitted to the Congress for consideration. In the U.S., therefore, there was concern with, and opposition to the substantial support, that U.S. refugee policy was giving to the Zionist cause, but it was too late and too little to have any significant influence on events. In his report, Meter complained of the difficulty of getting the Jewish, as distinct from non-Jewish DPs, to do any work or even help fix up their own dwellings. Nevertheless, they constantly complained that things were not being done as well as they thought they could be done. Meter also pointed out that illegal activities and crimes of violence by DPs were numerous. He remarked that the U.S. had agreed to accept as immigrants 2,250,000 refugees from Europe. It is of only slight value to report here the figures that were being given for the number of Jewish DPs. In the autumn of 1946, it was said that there were 185,000 Jewish DPs in camps in West Germany. When one adds those in Austria, the figure would exceed 200,000. It is also said that there were over 400,000 Jewish refugees in Western Europe on July 1, 1947. However, such figures do not say very much, because the camps for Jews and other refugees really served as transit camps and, in the case of the Jews, there was the constant movement toward the U.S. and Palestine, largely illegal or unofficial in the case of the latter destination, and possibly in the case of the former destination as well. The principal, but not sole, destinations of the Jews who left Europe were Palestine and the U.S., so we should attempt to estimate the numbers involved. Palestine population figures kept by the British authorities are probably accurate up to some point in 1946, see Table 9 contained in the print and ebook editions of this book. In late 1946, there were supposed to be 608,000 Jews and 1,237,000 Muslims, Christians and others. Past this point, accurate British figures do not exist, on account of the large extent of illegal immigration, as the British gradually lost control of the situation. In any event, by the time some of the dust had settled in July 1949, the Israeli government reported that there were 925,000 Jews in Israel. These were predominantly Jews of European origins, the large-scale immigration of Jews from North Africa and Asia having been a subsequent development promoted by the Israeli government. By 1957, there were about 1,868,000 Jews in Israel, and 868,000 Arabs had fled to neighboring countries since the Jewish takeover. It is worth pausing here to remark that many people have a very mistaken picture of Zionism and Israel. It is now widely assumed that Zionism was born at the end of World War II, when large numbers of European Jews, having decided that they could no longer live in Europe, invaded a previously all-Arab Palestine, and drove the Arab inhabitants out. In fact, Zionism, the movement for the establishment of a Jewish state in Palestine, has a history that starts in the late 19th century. By 1917, Zionism was such a potent political force that Britain, locked in bloody struggle with Imperial Germany, made the Balfour Declaration, effectively promising Palestine to the Jews, in return for Jewish support in the war. Since Britain also had certain agreements with the Arabs, Palestine became the, quote, too often promised land, unquote. Zionist organizations promoted the movement of Jews to Palestine after World War I, and during the 30s, as the population figures above suggest, Palestine had become perhaps the biggest headache of British foreign policy, which faced the impossible task of reconciling the Jewish and Arab claims to Palestine. It was during the late 30s that Zionism found itself actively cooperating with the Gestapo, which met regularly with Zionist representatives, and even helped in the provision of farms and facilities to set up training centers in Germany and Austria for Jewish emigrants. The Zionists and the Gestapo had the same objective of getting Jews out of Europe. The consequence of World War II did not create Zionism as an effective political movement, they merely gave Zionism the world political victory it needed, for the final stage of the takeover of Palestine. All world power had fallen to the US and the Soviet Union, both of which were most friendly to the Zionist cause at the time. Under the circumstances, the Arab position was hopeless, because it depended on the firmness and political independence of a Britain that was almost prostrate politically and economically.